You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. One of Us is a podcast and video network funded all but entirely by donations and subscriptions. We do accept pitches for audio-based or banner ads, but on a case-by-case basis. If you are interested in that, contact us at oneofusnet@gmail.com. With the amount of audio and video content we generate, it is expensive and extremely time-consuming to keep things running. Please go to the webpage oneofus.net and sign up for a subscription at $2, $5, $10, or $25 and get a ton of bonus content. One of Us needs and appreciates all your support.
So I got ready for this recording, and you wouldn't believe it. I really didn't have any new jokes for this intro. I just don't know how it happened. And yeah, hey guys, we're talking about Unsolved Mysteries Volume Dos, or like, what is this, like season 14, 15? I don't even know.
It's 15. They've had over 586 episodes.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, they,
well,
they went from being on NBC to CBS to Lifetime to Spike, and now streaming on Netflix.
Spike, is that after like the 21 days of James Bond Christmas marathon? Follow Unsolved Mysteries. But hey guys, I'm Nathan. With me I have Tessa.
Hello.
And I have Elliot.
Hey, hey.
And goddammit, I have Doggett.
Anthology Doggett.
Anthology Doggett. So, y'all know what Unsolved Mysteries is. It's a true crime show. Normally has Robert Stack. Doesn't have Robert Stack because of Netflix. If you're listening to this review, I'm assuming you watched the previous Unsolved Mysteries or listened to our previous review. So I'm going to spare you all the details and get like right into it.
Nathan, it doesn't have Robert Stack, not because of Netflix, but because he's dead.
Oh, shit.
He died. He died.
They could pull a Rogue One.
Is there a mystery about it?
No, there's no, I don't think so. He died in like 2002. Anyways.
Oh, okay.
Recast him.
But yeah, so my unsolved mystery is I just found out Robert Stack died.
Yep.
Beyond that, let's get into the episodes, which are pretty fucking depressing this round.
I cried.
Yeah, I cried during, I think it was the fourth episode, but I'll get into it. Starting with the first episode, I'm going to sort of like do your thoughts as we go through. So the first one is Washington Insider Murder, which is a murder that took place in 2010 where a former White House aide named Jack Wheeler was found in a Delaware landfill, and they ruled his death as a homicide, and there are a lot of mysterious details with it, mainly about his actions before his death caught on camera footage. How did y'all feel about this? Start with you, Tessa.
I don't want to give too much away about the episode, but it definitely seemed dubious the way his body was dumped. And his station in life definitely leads to possible conspiracy theories about what could have happened and the departments he worked with. I feel like this one, maybe they might be able to solve it. You know, there's some camera footage from that day and stuff. So it's a pretty good episode.
And Doggett?
You know, I can't wait for Martin Scorsese to make a 4-hour long movie about this mysterious man's death. I look forward to that. And unlike most of the other episodes of the season, I actually really enjoyed this one. They made me kind of sympathetic towards this person who I didn't really know. He was like he was suffering due bipolar disorder, right?
Yeah, they think so. Yeah.
Yeah, that poor bastard. He didn't deserve this. I hope they catch the guy.
And Elliot?
Yeah, I felt pretty much the same. This was probably one of the better episodes of the season. I agree with Doggett. Definitely help me sympathize with this guy. And definitely, yeah, definitely just a lot of weird, interesting stuff that certainly made me think that there's sort of a bigger conspiracy going on with his death. And, you know, I mean, he's involved with national defense stuff at a sort of a granular level, so not that surprising that he might find himself in a compromising situation.
Yeah, this was overall a really good episode. It made me empathize with him a lot. Man was definitely dealing with some serious mental illness. Just looking at that security footage, I couldn't help but think that maybe this is one of those deaths that, like, maybe he just got crushed by a trash compactor. Like, I don't know.
Oh, he got an Anton Yelchin?
Well, that isn't quite Anton Yelchin, but I'm not going into that super
Shredder
awful
from
death.
End of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
Yes, exactly. I feel like all the facts around him being a White House aide and all the national security is enough to, like, give you conspiracy theories, but I feel like his death was more accidental than straight-up homicide. But that's just me. Moving on to the next one, a death in Oslo, however I pronounce it. This is about a woman who's found dead in a luxury hotel room in Norway. It appears to be suicide, but there are a lot of weird peculiarities. Like, she had no identification, her briefcase had 25 rounds of ammunition, and nobody reported her missing. And even the receptionist had no idea who she was because she checked in without an ID or a credit card, which, super sus. I'm going to start with you again, Tessa. How'd you feel about this episode?
I felt it was definitely sus, and that it was Norway that it was a suicide. They had a lot of scientists look over, you know, as far as her hands, and, like, it was just too clean of a scene. So they're thinking, you know, there's something else going on here with this woman and what her potential profession might be.
That pun was so bad, Tessa.
Yeah.
I want to murder that pun.
But okay, Elliot. Suicide. It refuses.
Elliot, moving on to you, so I don't have to hear any more bad puns.
This one was also interesting. I think it was really padded out. I mean, you could have told the story in like 20 minutes, I think. But another interesting story. I don't know if we're doing theories now, but you can
shoot kind of so long as it's like brief.
I side with the they had like a former secret agent guy that they were talking to, and he postulated that, you know, she was, you know, working deep undercover or you know, special agent kind of stuff. And, I don't know, it sounds pretty plausible. Just given everything about, you know, no one reported her missing, no name, no nothing. And the fact that she was able to get into the hotel, no ID, no credit card, it's, you know, I think she had some kind of government pass and...
Doggett?
I, too, am interested in the story of this female John Wick. Who? How much... They found a lot of ammo on her, right?
25 rounds, yeah.
25 isn't that much.
Oh, I was just saying, it's a lot of ammo if she's a good shot.
Let's call it. It's a lot of ammo for somebody that committed suicide.
Also true.
Possibly.
Yeah, I kept wondering why they didn't...
You know what it is about these episodes? A lot of them, for me, one of the things that's against them is, I'm not going to, this is interesting and cool. I don't know for me, if I label these as, like, that mysterious. Because the things we threw out there, those are all extremely plausible things.
I also don't understand why they didn't ask the receptionist, like, whether or not she was with anybody at the time, because I just don't know how she was.
Yeah, there's somebody that reported that when she checked in one of the times, there was a man with her that wrote his name down as her husband. It's in the episode.
Oh, I guess I must have just zoned out. I was really fascinated by the investigator's accent. But moving on to Death Row Fugitive. In the 1960s, a repeat sexual offender, Lester Eubanks, was sentenced to death for killing a 14-year-old in Ohio. After the death penalty was abolished in 1972, he left Death Row and was a part of a really fucking bizarre program that allows confessed murderers to go Christmas shopping with other inmates. And he escaped, and he's still not found to this day. I'm going to start with you again, Tessa. How did you feel about this one?
I thought I was taking crazy pills, because, good lord, it's like they were allowed to go, not only were they allowed to go Christmas shopping, but unchaperoned. Like, the guards didn't stay with them. They're allowed to, like,
so bizarre.
Honor system. Don't run off, you know. Just come back and get some Christmas presents. Yeah, sure, buddy, I'll do that. Yeah, he made a run for it. Got away.
Yeah, I feel like this guy's definitely dead now. Like, I don't know. That's just my personal thought process on it. If COVID didn't get him, something did. But, Elliot?
This was kind of a more boring episode for me. It was kind of straightforward. They let him on this stupid program and he ran away and we don't know where he is. I agree with you. I think he's probably dead. And yeah, I don't really have much more to say. That's kind of all there is to it. This was one of my lesser episodes.
I agree.
Yeah, because again, there was no mystery. It's just, oh, this guy's he left. He got out of Dodge. He's gone. He most likely left the country, or he's dead.
Yeah.
This show frustrated me sometimes. I'll tell you my opinion. It takes one asshole. It takes one asshole to ruin a great program for everybody else. Think about poor Devin. Think about poor Devin, who saved up all his commissary money to get his grandmother a nice knitted jacket. And now there's no knitted jacket for Grandma the next Christmas. All because of this piece of shit, who also killed... You know,
I hated that like half the people they interviewed acted like the big problem with the case is that they abolished the death penalty. I'm like, no, the big problem with this case is that they let them all Christmas shop without fucking guards. Like, what type of program is that? But I digress. It was an all right episode. Tsunami Spirits.
Is the consequence... I was going to say, it's the consequence of the people involved in the cases being the narrators of their case.
Yeah, definitely. So our next episode, Tsunami Spirits. In 2011, you may have heard about this, there was a devastating earthquake and tsunami that killed over 20,000 people and left 2,500 missing. Following the disaster, a lot of people spoke about a strange phenomenon involving ghost passengers, just a lot of ghost shit. This episode was so sad and depressing. Tessa, how did you feel about it?
Yeah, this was a really horrible natural disaster. It was a 8-point magnitude earthquake that was followed by a tsunami wave that took out an entire village or small town. And then after that, it snowed. And the people that survived from drowning potentially froze to death. It's a real upper, this one. And so this is probably one of the better supernatural episodes, I want to say. Last season's was a UFO one that was a story that I've heard a million times. But this one, I liked it for, you know, just being culturally different from what we're used to and seeing Japan and their take on death and ghosts. And so that was kind of a cool aspect to this and hearing all the stories.
Yeah, definitely. I felt like one of the best aspects was hearing about how the Japanese handle grief in general and how it's not really, they feel that like grief counseling is a way of forgetting the dead, which it is. It's just, it's very interesting. But Elliot?
Yeah, this is another kind of boring episode for me. Obviously, it's tragic what happened.
You monster!
I don't believe in ghosts, so that kind of takes the wind out of the sails for this one for me. You know, it's incredibly sad what happened. Obviously, there's going to be personal grief and collective societal grief that goes on after that. And, you know, I know that Japanese culture and Shinto religion has a lot of spiritual aspects, but like lots of different individual spirits going on. So I wonder how much that sort of plays into this idea of ghosts. I don't know. I could have skipped this one, to be honest. I didn't think it was all that interesting.
Doggett?
Well, I'm a pussy, and I don't believe in ghosts, but ghost stories scare the shit out of me. And this is what I'm fucking talking about. I want more out of this Unsolved Mysteries, because I was watching this at dark, with my headphones on, with my tablet like 2 inches away from my face. I'm just like, I'm thinking I'm watching Haunting a Hill House. I'm checking the background to see if there's any ghosts around. Maybe circumstances made this episode more fun for me, but I enjoy these little mini stories about ghosts and throughout this episode. And you know what? Fuck it. I'll count it as a mystery, because are ghosts real? I'll never know.
You love ghost shit, Doggett. This episode was actually...
Yeah, I don't believe in any of it.
This episode was actually one of the best for me. I don't believe in ghosts personally, but I found the cultural perspective on ghosts and just grief and loss to be very, very sad, interesting, and moving in a lot of ways. This was actually one of the highlights of the season for me. But moving on to another sort of lake-ish involved thing, Lady in the Lake. Water involved. I don't know. It was a stupid segue. So this woman named Joanne Romaine, her car was found outside of her church in Grosse Pointe, Michigan, and the police sort of immediately came to the assumption that she walked into a nearby freezing lake and drowned herself, despite the fact that they didn't find her body. 17 days later, they found her body in a river 35 miles away. Her children are convinced that foul play is afoot, to say it in I can't even remember his name, but it doesn't matter. Daniel Craig, not Uncut Gems, fucking Knives Out. I'm stupid. basically, they have a list of suspects, and yeah. How did you guys feel about this one? I'll start with you, Tessa.
Yeah, I mean, the two main suspects they have are the brother, who has dealings where basically he does business, maybe not in the most legal way. And there were theories that she was killed to send a message to her brother. Their family had a lot of money issues. She just recently divorced her husband, who was not too happy about it. I feel like they could looked in the husband a bit more. The cops in this seemed like they didn't really do a lot of work. Strangely enough, one of their relatives is a police officer, so that could lead to why they kept trying to say this was a suicide when it clearly did not have any signs that pointed to that. So definitely suspicious. But yeah, the cops would be like, oh yeah, we don't think they did it. And we're like, okay, cool. Could you explain why? Do they have an alibi? Like, you know, everything the cops had was just like on a hunch. So.
Alibi, schmalibi.
Basically, like, proof to it being a suicide versus a homicide. Meh, we'll just say it's suicide and call it a day.
Elliot?
Yeah, I like this one better than the previous couple ones. I don't put a lot of stock in the idea that her death was some sort of message to her brother. That seems like someone's putting themselves in too much jeopardy just to send a message. And if you're going to go through that much trouble, might as well kill the brother. You know, I think this is a pretty clear-cut I think it's foul play. You know, maybe she knew the person, maybe she didn't. But I don't really see a larger conspiracy going on. I see someone who, you know, probably was killing for pleasure.
And Doggett?
Would we enjoy the show more if it wasn't called Unsolved Mysteries? What if this, like, Cold Cases? Redux? I don't know, just a random thought I just had. I don't know, I thought this episode was kind of boring. It just seemed like another unsolved murder, which is just more sad than, like, ooh, I'm gonna get to the bottom of this. It's like, can I get to the bottom of this? This feels like professionals should be really looking into this more. I didn't have deep personal opinions on this one. It was just a sad story.
Yeah, this story was extremely sad. My biggest takeaway from this is that brother is a piece of shit. Like, even if he didn't get his sister killed, like, I love seeing, like, she's the most important person in the world to me. But if it was somebody that I did business with, I can't help that. You know, like, it's whatever. Let me go play pool again. It was just so... Yeah. It was so stupid. But,
you know,
yeah.
You know he asked them to film him in his, like, man cave. Like, you gotta get a shot of me playing pool and get a shot of that
he
wall with my collectibles.
So... He looks so happy to be on camera. Like, he felt like he was, like... It seemed like he was auditioning for The Sopranos. But, yeah. Moving on to the last episode. Stolen Kids. So, in 1989, two toddlers vanished from the same New York park. Search turned out nothing. And families haven't given up hope. We've heard so many stories like this in the past, and God, this episode broke my heart. Tessa?
Yeah, this is the one that made me cry. I was like, oh, we're having feels now. Yep, it's happening. Okay. But yeah, they are still holding out hope that these kids might show up. I mean, what with all the DNA, you know, family heritage kits that you can get in, you know, people are finding out things that they didn't want to know about their family, whether they're adopted or, you know, the 23andMe's, I suppose. So they might still show up. They may have been taken. Maybe they're murdered. I don't know. But it was pretty suspect because I think it happened within 3 months of each other. Yeah, it was like the same year.
Yeah.
And they were grabbed from a park. It was in a neighborhood where there were tons of, like, apartment complexes, like 10 or 12 of them, each like 14 stories tall. So it was almost impossible for them to search the entire area. Anyways.
And Elliot?
Yeah, this is definitely one of the more interesting episodes for me. I think the show kind of bookends itself with the more interesting stories. Yeah, I mean, you know, just another tragedy. We've heard so many stories over the years of people taking babies. If you've ever been to New York, you know that, especially on Manhattan, it is just, you know, it's crowded. It's a crowded place. And if you're going to go to a playground, boy, it's going to be really crowded, especially in Harlem. So, you know, turn your head for a second. And yeah, I mean... can see how somebody could swipe a baby and even get away with it a second time. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. There's certainly a possibility that these kids could still be alive. I don't think someone's taking a baby to kill it, really. Sounds more like a kind of a Raising Arizona situation without all the humor. So yeah, I don't know. It seems like it would be really hard to track down a child. You'd have to get some sort of DNA test, and it's, you know.
Yeah.
Who knows if the kids even know that they are, you know, from their biological parents. Yeah, I like this one. Solid unsolved mystery. I think I already said, I think it was a baby snatcher who really wanted a baby for themselves.
Yeah. Doggett?
I hate this one the most. I despise this episode, and there's really only one petty reason. Because there was just this, they kept feeling to the need to, like, reassure everybody, hey, maybe they're alive. And I listen to a lot of true crime podcasts. Maybe too much, you may say. A ungodly amount. But what I've learned through all that is, most likely those kids are dead. And the investigators is kind of irresponsible the way they keep going, hey, you don't know. And really, it just seems more hurtful than anything else to keep giving this family all this hope when odds are the worst, darkest, most awful shit you're thinking about that might have happened after all these years most likely is what happened. And there's no, like, making jokes about it or anything. It's just heartbreaking. And this one made me mad.
Yeah. I mean, it did its job. I was really appalled by how long that montage of all those age progressions were at the end. I was just like, oh, Jesus. I just hope for the best, and I hope there is a follow-up and this brings more light to these cases, because that's fucked up. And I couldn't imagine being a kid raised by different parents like that. I guess there probably have been movies from that perspective, but that's an interesting perspective. I don't know. Moving on to final thoughts. I'll start with you, Tessa.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of us throwing around, you know, oh, that wasn't very interesting, or that wasn't, you know, is that really a mystery? Or, I mean, these are all unsolved mysteries in their own right. They're maybe not as interesting as some of the movies that we see, but real life rarely is. So I want to say this season was still pretty solid. You know, maybe some stories grabbed me more than others, but they're all real and they're trying to get them figured out. So I'll give them that. I'm looking forward to new episodes. I'm looking forward to the next season. Also, I hear that you can get the soundtrack to Unsolved Mysteries from Terrorvision Records. So if you're really digging the music, get yourself the soundtrack. But yeah, I look forward to next season. That's beautiful. It was great. I couldn't tell the difference. Do you have the record?
No, I don't have the record. I just figured I'd do it bad enough so that we don't get copyright sued.
That's fair.
What would you give this out of 10, Tessa?
Oh, shit. Forgot we were doing the whole rating system thing. Yeah, I would probably give this 8.5 out of 10 unlabeled jackets.
All right, and Doggett?
Well, I think in the last few months, I've made it no secret, I don't enjoy this show that much. I think this is very much a thing for... You know what, that's gonna be fucked up, I'm not gonna say that out loud. I think this for a certain group of people who are going to enjoy this a lot, and I more power to them. I fully understand, and this is for people that really take true crime way more seriously than I do. And that sounds awful when I say it out loud, but it is the truth. Maybe I need more. Needs a few extra spices on my true crime, and this is very by the books, and I know it's the original, and I'm not taking points away from it, except that I am currently for that. So I think if you grew up watching Unsolved Mysteries, you're gonna continue to enjoy Unsolved Mysteries. But for me, this is probably where I bow out on this show. I'm gonna give this 6 out of 10 possible mysteries.
All right, and Elliot?
Yeah, I think I echo just about everything that's been said. I mean, I think a show like this, and its sort of episodic documentary nature, it's almost hard to judge it as a whole. But average out, I thought this season was kind of middling. You know, slightly less, or slightly more middling than the first season. Probably just because these are the mysteries they decided not to put in the first season. I agree. If you grew up watching Unsolved Mysteries, you're probably going to like this. Although at the same time, there's just a glut of other true crime stuff out there. you know, be it documentaries or podcasts. And honestly, I wonder how many of these mysteries are covered by other shows. I bet more than a few of them are. And I wonder if you couldn't get a better experience learning about them elsewhere. But that being said, you know, these were interesting. They were good ways to pass the time. So I will give them 7 out of 10 gross landfills.
Yeah. I kind of side more with Doggett on this. I mean, we did the past two together, reuniting for Unsolved Mysteries. This is kind of just a 5.5 out of 10. It was a solid season. I understand the importance of it all, but God, it was so depressing and a slog to get through in a way that the first volume wasn't. I don't know. It was all right. I'll probably still do volume 3 just for consistency, but it was kind of hard to get through some of these. I mean, A, due to the subject matter, but B, just due to like certain interviews, just feeling like, oh, well, you could have asked that question. And then like, it's like, wait, you're not going to ask that question, but you're still going to pad this out to like 47 minutes. What the fuck? I don't know. That's just my personal thought on it. Beyond that, if you guys have any information on where any original jokes Nathan has are, call the Unsolved Mysteries hotline at 1-800-876-5353.